copyrighted program created by Rio Grande.
Los Angeles Police calling all cars. Attention all cars. Broadcast 175 regarding a theater robbery. Go to the Million Dollar Theater. Check with the officers there. That's all. Rosenquist.
Do you remember this saying? If you make the finest mousetrap, the world will beat a path to your door. That's true about mousetraps, gasoline, or any other product. For 2 years, Rio Grande led all other gasolines in percentage of sales increase. Thousands of well-informed motorists have literally beaten a path to the doors of Rio Grande dealers to get police car performance in their cars. Engineers, purchasing agents, police and fire departments, those who test gasoline, those to whom gasoline means most, have specified Rio Grande cracked gasoline in all their emergency equipment month after month. Listen to this list of new users just since the first of the year. Pasadena, Monterey Park, Marysville, Phoenix, Orange County, California, Coconino County, Arizona, Las Vegas, Nevada, and now Linwood, California is the latest city to fly the Rio Grande banner and have true police car performance in her emergency equipment. Linwood is a thriving center of new and prosperous industries. Its 10,000 citizens take pride in their well-kept houses, schools, and law enforcement agencies. We have told you many times about Los Angeles, Oakland, Berkeley, Fresno, Santa Barbara, San Diego, Maricopa County, Arizona, and many, many other cities and counties. Nothing can stop the march of progress of such a definitely superior product. The only gasoline in the West refined by the Sinclair cracking process. Accept no substitute for police car performance. Get the added mileage, quicker starting, increased power that Rio Grande cracked gasoline gives. Patronize your independent Rio Grande dealer from now on. Once again, we present Chief James E. Davis of the Los Angeles Police Department. Chief Davis.
Good evening, friends. Tonight, you will hear a strange story of intrigue, petty jealousies, suspicious business partners, and to top it off, the old and well-known act, the double cross. When officers were first notified of this crime, they proceeded to investigate it in the usual ways. But after a few hours of answers that made little, if any, sense, they were forced to rely on their own powers of deduction. Even then, they found themselves faced with one of those unusual situations where every time a lead started to develop into something, it suddenly, and apparently with no reason at all, came to an abrupt end. It is a story like this that illustrates so well the patience and vigilance of the modern police officer. He has a job to do, and until that job is marked solved, his efforts never cease. He may put it aside for another case, but always, hidden away in some portion of his mind reserved for that, the driving thought remains, complete the case.
Monday morning, March 14th, 1932. Standing before the huge safe in his office, Manager George Evans pauses an instant in silent gloating at the thought of the sight that will greet his eyes in a moment. Inside the safe, more than $3,000 in bills and silver, the weekend receipts of his theater. Then, shaking off the momentary preoccupation, he kneels, consults a small slip of paper, begins twirling the glistening silver-plated dial to its appointed mark. Left, then right, then left again. Suddenly a small click of falling tumblers. A twist of the handle, and Manager Evans' face gleams with satisfaction as the door swings open.
There. Now, this little door. And there it is. Oh. Why. Well, it's got to be. Good Lord. Coffin it. Kopfnick. He knows the combination. He was here first this morning. Kopfnick. Kopfnick!
Yes?
Come in here. Come in here quickly, Sam.
What's got into you, George? What's all the shout? George, what's the matter with you?
The safe. Look for yourself.
The safe?
Gone. Everything gone.
It couldn't be. That's impossible.
Impossible, is it? Well, look for yourself, Sam.
First I lose money on investments, then I lose money in the theater business. Now I lose money for my safe. How could it be, George? Only two people know the combination.
Yes. You are one of them, Sam.
You also.
We should call the police.
Yeah.
They will want to know things, Sam.
I want to know some things too, George. You call the police.
All right. Hello? Get me the police, please. Yes, that's right. The police. I want to report a robbery. Yes, that's right. A robbery.
And in response to the call, Captain Frank Katzenberger, in charge of the safe detail, accompanied by Detective Lieutenants George Chilson and C.A. Appledorn, cover the four blocks in as many minutes. Rushing upstairs to the manager's office, they find themselves practically having to battle their way in through a group of excited people cluttering the small room.
All right, you people, take it easy.
The way you talk, you think I done it. That's silly, but I be stealing from myself.
I left last night before the money was put away, and I can prove it.
Wait a minute. Let's get this story. Now, quiet down. To start with, I want to know who you people are. What's your name?
I'm Herbert Laser. I got my ideas about this.
All right, what do you do around here?
I'm a partner with Sam Kopfnick, and we own the theaters. I'm the one who lost the money. Would I be robbing myself?
Well, it's been done. But wait a minute, who are these people? And who was the one that found the money gone?
That one, George Evans. He's the manager of the theater.
I can prove that I left before the money was put away.
All right, which one put the money away?
This fella, John Walsh. He's the assistant manager. He handles the money.
I don't know the combination of the safe. Evans opened it. I just put the money in and locked it. Mr. Early can vouch for me.
All right, who's Mr. Early?
He's the manager of the Circle Theater. This is him right here. Come on, go ahead. Come on.
All right, now what were you doing here last night?
I came in with the money for my theater. It was 11:30, but I didn't see the safe locked. Some people were waiting for me, and I went right out.
And who are you?
I'm Molly Lorf. I'm the cashier.
All right, now everybody just sit down. I'll try to get some more dope on this. And remember, you're all under suspicion.
I don't see why I'm under suspicion. Would I steal my own money? Maybe you know about it, Evans.
Not me. I left at 10:30. That's before the money's even put in the safe. I wasn't near the place.
Wait a minute. Now, we're not getting anywhere this way. Now, if someone will give me a nice, quiet story about how things work around here, maybe we can get something done. How about you, Evans?
Sure. Well, it's like this. The last show starts about 10:07. When it quiets down, the ticket seller leaves the box office and takes the money and the unsold tickets upstairs. Then I open the safe, and John Walsh here puts the money in, and is supposed to lock it. Well, last night, the same thing happened. I opened the safe about 10:15, and about 10:30, I can prove I left then. Walsh can tell you that I left before the money was put away.
Yeah, you could have come back after and opened the safe again.
What? Don't try to be funny in a time like this.
Well, you could have, couldn't you?
Keep it calm, boys. Keep it calm. Now, in all this, who was the last one to actually see the money inside the safe?
I guess I was.
You're Walsh?
That's right.
All right, let's hear your story.
Well, after the last performance started, I went to the box office and got the money box, and Miss Lorf and I took it up and counted it together. That took us about 15 minutes, and Miss Lorf left right away. Then Evans came in and opened the safe. He's right when he says he left at 10:30. He did. And I was alone from then until about 11 o'clock. I was counting out $100 in change for the next day, and when I finished that, I put it in and locked the door of the inner safe.
Inner safe? There are two of them?
Yes, a big one and a smaller one inside.
Did you know the combination of either one?
No one did, but Mr. Evans and Mr. Kopfnick.
All right, go on with your story.
Yeah, go ahead. Tell us again about locking the safe. You're sure about that, are you?
I'm absolutely certain that I locked the inner safe.
All right. Then what did you do?
Well, at 11 o'clock, I went to check some of the earphones that we have for patrons who are hard of hearing.
Who told you to check earphones? We got an outside serviceman who's supposed to do that. You had no right to roam around in the theater.
Just a minute. I have a written order from the main office to investigate a complaint that the earphones were not working properly. I can produce that order if you'd like me to.
I don't believe your story at all.
All right, let him finish.
Well, that's about all, officer. I left a little before midnight.
All right, where did you go after you left the theater? Go straight home?
Yes, I left my laundry at a little place around the corner, and then I took a streetcar home.
You found a laundry open at midnight?
No, the laundry wasn't open. I put it in a chute that they have.
What kind of a container was your laundry in?
What? Oh, I see what you mean. You think I might have had the money wrapped in my laundry. Well, I had a shirt and three collars and a pasteboard box, that's all. I guess I'm in a bad spot, all right, but I'd like you to remember that I don't know the combination of the safe.
Well, it was an inside job. That safe wasn't blown or jimmied. Someone unlocked it by using the combination.
Evans and Kofanek are the only ones who have the combination. Even if I knew it, I wouldn't rob my own safe.
Perhaps you mean that I did it. I can account for every minute after I left the theater.
I didn't do it. You didn't do it. I think you should put somebody in jail and sweat the truth out of them. I have my idea.
You needn't be afraid I'll run away. I'm as anxious as you are to get this matter cleared up.
Laser, Evans, and Walsh are taken to headquarters, where each man is questioned thoroughly, but for no gain. The most intensive grilling fails to shake their clashing stories. Walsh repeats that Evans and Kofanek are the only ones who know the combination of the safe. Laser advances the contention that Walsh failed to put the money in the safe at all. Evans simply states that he can prove that he left the theater before the money was put away. The men are released, and officers Katzenberger and Appledorn go farther afield in their quest for facts. The owner of a candy store tells of seeing Walsh acting suspiciously near the theater on the night of the robbery. The employees of the theater claim that Walsh is innocent. The fact that Evans and Kofanek are losing money suggests the robbery might have been performed for the insurance that would be collected. Facts, suppositions, personal feelings all into the case, all lead nowhere. It develops into a hopeless tangle. The police are baffled because two people, unknown to them and forgotten by the suspects, cultured the seed that finally developed into the drama enacted on the night of March 18th. The simple friendship of James Hill and Ruth Becker for Evans, the manager of the theater, set the stage for the action. The two people are in Hill's apartment after being at the theater for the evening show.
That's why I liked it. It was sad the way they ended it, but, well, I don't know. It was right, I think.
Yeah, it was good, all right. Say, why did you give me that funny look after the show when we were with Evans in the office?
I don't know. I was just surprised at all the money he put in the safe, I guess.
Is that all you were thinking about?
Sure, that's all. Why?
I was just wondering. Did you notice the piece of paper he had?
Yeah, I noticed it all right. It was a combination, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was the combination. I'd like to have a safe with all that money in it, wouldn't you?
Sure. I'd like to have a lot of money like that.
Well...
Oh, but Jim, it'd be impossible to do anything like that. How could we?
Oh, forget it. Forget I said anything about it. Could be done, though. I'm sure of it.
Time passes. The thought of the money in the safe grows in Hill's mind. And then one afternoon, the three are together in Hill's apartment. Evans is sitting on a couch, drowsy, after a lunch prepared by Ruth Becker, who is in the kitchen washing the few dishes used. Hill slouches in a chair looking out of a window.
What time is it, Jim?
A little after two. Sleepy?
Yeah. And I have to be back at the theater about four. If I go to sleep, will you wake me? I can hardly keep myself awake.
Sure, go ahead. I'll wake you about 3:30. I'm kind of sleepy myself.
Well, don't forget to wake me up.
In less than a minute, the combination is obtained and copied. The key is delicately extracted, is rushed to the locksmith. In 20 minutes, the duplicate is safely hidden. Evans is awakened later and leaves, none the wiser. The stage is set. And shortly before midnight on Sunday, March 13th, just 4 days since the key and combination were stolen, Hill and Ruth Becker are in a car near the theater.
Are you sure there's nobody there?
Yeah, it's closed, all right. Last time I called, I let the phone ring for over a minute. There's nobody there.
Well, don't you want to drive around the block once more?
No, it's all clear. What's the matter? Are you losing your nerve? been around the block about six times.
Oh, no, I'm not losing my nerve. I just wanted there to be any slip, that's all. We don't want to get caught.
Well, we won't get caught. Let's quit stalling. I'll walk through the alley and go into the back exit.
All right.
Okay, you go to the Cleaver Hotel. If everything goes all right, I'll meet you at your car in front in half an hour.
Be careful, Jim. Good luck. I'll see you in half an hour.
Okay, Cleaver Hotel. So long.
Taxi! Taxi! Right here! Taxi!
Right here, boss. Where to?
The hotel. And hurry.
Yes.
How much do I owe you?
Just 35 cents, boss.
Okay, here. Keep the change.
Thanks.
I got it all right.
Did you have any trouble?
No, not at all. Come on, let's beat it to my apartment.
Okay.
$450.50. $450.50. No wonder this stuff was heavy. Nearly $500 in silver.
We'll have to get that change into paper before we can use it.
Yeah, but we're going to wait a while before we do that. We'd be sticking our necks out if we did it now. What do we do with it in the meantime?
Well, we've got to hide it someplace. I know. I'll bury it in the lot next to where I live. It'll be safe there.
I don't like that idea very well. We'll find a better spot than that.
Oh, but listen, that's the best place in the world for it. Why, nobody'd think of looking there for it. It'll be safe, Jim.
All right. If you think it'll be okay, we'll bury it then.
Sure, I'll do it myself. I know just the place for it.
How much currency did you count?
There's over $2,000.
$2,000?
Yes.
What a haul. We're rich. We don't want to touch that for a while either. What'll we do with it?
Well, I don't know. We can't have it around.
Well, we aren't going to bury this in any vacant lot. I still don't like that idea.
Oh, now the silver will be all right there, Jim, but you've got to think of something else for the paper money. Now, if we could just store it someplace.
Store it.
Yeah.
We could get a safety deposit box.
Oh, deposit box. That'd be the worst thing in the world to do. Well, they'd be sure and check up on us if we did that.
Yeah, I guess you're right. Now, let's just keep it here.
Oh, no. We'll put it someplace where neither one of us is near it.
Why do you say that? Don't you trust me?
Oh, sure. Sure, I trust you, but I just think it'd be better to have it someplace else. You wouldn't want me to keep it, would you?
Why, sure. I'd trust you anywhere. You do what you think best.
Say, I think I've got an idea. Sure, we'll get a suitcase, put the money in it, and then store it. How does that sound to you?
You think that'll be safe? We don't want to lose it now that we got it.
Oh, that's the best thing to do. Why, it'll be perfectly safe there. And just to be sure, I'll get some sealing wax. So neither of us will have anything to worry about.
Why do that? Say, I don't think you trust me at all.
And so plans for concealing the money are completed. And Ruth leaves alone with the silver, returns in an hour, telling a story of how she buried in the lot next to her house. She and Hill leave with the currency. Buy a small green trunk, put the money in it, store it at a van and storage company on Cahuenga Boulevard. The lock is sealed with wax. Two slow weeks pass. Hill impatiently waits for the time when he can go after the money. Finally, he receives a phone call from his accomplice. She has decided that enough time has elapsed. She calls for him on the morning of Monday, March 27th. Together, they drive for the place where the loot is stored.
I think it's safe enough to take the money now. I don't think anybody suspects us.
Yeah, it's quieted down, I guess. Been reading about it in the papers. Two guys are going to lose their jobs. I almost sent a letter to the police to tell them not to let the boss fire these two guys. Seems too bad.
Listen, don't worry about them. You worry about us. We may get caught yet.
No, we won't get caught. I'm sure be glad to get my hands on that dough. I'm broke.
Oh, well, it won't be long now. We'll have plenty of money. Yeah, I hope nothing happens.
What could happen? Nobody knows we got the money stored. Nobody even knows we got the money. What's there to be afraid of?
I don't know. I just got the willies. I'm kind
of
scared.
Well, you don't need to be. You don't even have to get out of the car. I'll go get it myself.
Oh, gee, that's swell of you. I'd rather have you get it anyhow. I feel kind of funny. Well, here we are. I'll pull up in front of the building and wait right there for you.
Yeah, pull right over here. I'll only be a minute.
Okay.
Here I go. In a few minutes, we'll be rich. It's funny.
I got just about to pay the storage bill. Isn't that a laugh?
In a few minutes, Hill emerges, the small green trunk clutched tightly in his arms. But suddenly...
There he is. Get him. After him. Get the trunk. Come on, give me that trunk. Come on.
Jim! Jim, come here. It's the law. Harry, come on, drop the trunk. Leave it. You'll get caught. It's the police.
Get him. Don't let him get away.
Come on. Let's get going. Faster. Get going. There's a car following us.
I can't go any faster
they're
here.
They're going down the next street. Hurry. They're gaining. It's the police. Can't go any faster. That's better. They're falling back now. Turn down the next street.
Well, I guess we got away. Gee, I'm a wreck.
Sure, it's a lucky break. I don't know how we got away from them. Now, what are we doing now?
I don't know. Better get away from here.
We ought to get rid of this car. They must have got the license number. We better get rid of it.
Oh, I'm not worried about that. I don't think they got the number. I'm not going to do anything about that.
I hope you're right. If they were good cops, they got the number all right. Say, they gave up awful easy, didn't they?
Well, what do you say that for? We just barely got away.
Yeah, but it seems funny that let me give away on the sidewalk when they got the trunk. I can't understand them letting me get away.
Well, I don't know. Maybe they were dishonest cops. They knew there was money in the trunk and wanted it for themselves.
Well, maybe that's it. Sure lucky. I don't have a dime now.
Yeah, that's right. Well, I may be able to borrow some from a friend of mine. I'll try. Listen, you meet me at my house in about an hour. I think I can get some.
Okay. I'll be there.
Dropping Hill on the street corner, Ruth disappears in her car, and an hour later, Hill is with her at her house.
Well, I got $25. That's all I could get. I hope it's enough. Here you are.
Yeah, it's all right. Thanks. You know, I just can't get over those cops letting me get away. This doesn't seem right. Say, we still got the silver. Where is it?
Why, I lend it to a friend.
What?
Yeah, I lend it to a friend.
Who is this friend?
Well, Mr. Smith. You don't know him.
Oh, maybe I'm beginning to understand. Who did you borrow this $25 from?
A friend of mine. I told you that.
Yeah, but I want to know this friend's name. What is it?
Well, it's Mr. Jones.
Oh, Mr. Jones. A Mr. Smith and a Mr. Jones.
Oh, now listen,
I think you're lying.
I am
and
not.
I know you're going to take me to this Mr. Jones. Do you understand?
Oh, I'll let go of me.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, you're hurting me.
All right.
Listen, you're talking like a fool. I can't take you to Mr. Jones. You don't want him to know I borrowed it for you, do you?
I want to know plenty. I want to know where that silver is.
Oh.
I want it. I want to meet those cops of yours. Let me get away.
Listen,
you're lying to me. I've been framed. You never crossed me. You're dirty, lying little.
I'll call the police.
Oh, okay. All right. You call him. I'll fix it so you can really call him. I'll wreck this place.
Stop it.
Oh, I'll fix you. You double cross me, huh?
Stop.
All right. Go on.
Stop it.
Go on. Call the police.
Stop.
It's safe for you. Let me. I'll call him. I'll
call him. And radio officers Otto E. Frank and H.W. Walters. Responding to a call reporting a wild man, bring the screaming, cursing Hill to the burglary detail office. He'll be faced by Night Captain J.B. Curtis.
What do you want to do with him, Captain?
Oh, take him in and let him cool down for a while. We'll talk to him later.
All right, come on, you in here.
Say, he sure ruined that house. Broke every window in it and most of the furniture. He yelled something about a robbery when we got him. But then he closed up like a clam. He acted like a crazy man all the way down.
And so, Hill is booked on a malicious mischief charge. But because of his single mention of the word robbery, Lieutenant Appledorn is called in to question him. Casually, the officer picks up a blank arrest report and proceeds to Hill's cell.
Well, hello there. What are you in for?
Oh, for wrecking that house. She had it coming to her.
Wrecking that house? Why, according to this report here, you're in for suspicion of burglary.
What?
Yeah, that's what it says.
Burglary? Let me tell you about it. You got to let me tell you how it happened. Take me over to that theater. I don't know why I did it.
Wait. Say, are you talking about the $1 million theater job?
Yeah, that's it. Those fellas lost their jobs. They didn't do it. I did it. She never crossed me. You get her, too. She was in it with me.
Slow down. Ruth Becker. Who was in it with you?
Yeah, Ruth Becker. She never crossed me. She and those guys that I thought were
cops. Wait a minute. No, clerk.
Yeah,
clerk. So get me a clerk.
Yeah. We had the money stored. I came out with it. These guys came out and grabbed the trunk. She yelled that they were cops, and I ran. Don't let those guys get away. Don't let them get away.
All the tangled complexities of the case are straightened out as Hill continues his story. Ruth Becker is speedily arrested. Without a qualm, she admits having double-crossed the man with whom she assisted in planning and executing the crime. Names Otto Farron and Frank Marino as her partners in the scheme. Walsh, Laser, and Evans are cleared. The four people foiled in their first attempted crime are brought to trial on June 3rd, 1932. The jury, after an hour of deliberation, finds them all guilty as charged. Despite a plea for leniency because it's the quartet's first offense, Superior Court Judge William C. Doran pronounces their sentence.
I have a certain sympathy for these offenders, but I have a greater sympathy for the thousands of others who are just approaching the borderline of crime and are likely to step across unless deterred by adequate law enforcement regulations. I think that the court's first duty is to the state, and I have always thought that the probation law contends that probation shall be an exception and not a rule. Therefore, it will be the judgment of the court that for the offense to which you have been found guilty, to wit, grand theft, you will be confined in the state prison at San Quentin for the term prescribed by law.
Thus, by a strange twist of human nature, what might have been a tragic case of false arrest and imprisonment exposed itself because of a man's temper. And because James Hill mentioned that one word, robbery, he sent himself, as well as his accomplices, to prison to pay for their unhappy experience with crime as a business.
Thank you, Chief Davis.
On my way to the studio tonight, I stopped at my Rio Grande service station, and my Rio Grande dealer gave me the new April issue of the Calling All Cars News. There's an unusual detective story of the Peg Leg Terror, an exclusive personal story from Jimmy Cagney, a new crime mystery. It's a very interesting, and your free copy is available at any Rio Grande station. When you buy Rio Grande gasoline, don't fail to specify Sinclair Motor Oil, either Sinclair Pennsylvania or Sinclair Opaline, refined from the highest-priced crude oils in America. They are de-waxed, de-jellied, and sealed in tamper-proof cans. Sinclair oils are used in 45 countries of the world, by 150 railroads, by major airlines, and by every type of industry. They are the finest motor oils you can buy for your car. Get police car performance with Rio Grande cracked gasoline. Perfect motor lubrication with Sinclair motor oils. And interesting reading from Calling All Cars News. See your independent Rio Grande dealer tomorrow.
Sunday's police calling all cars, attention all cars. A cancellation broadcast 175 regarding a robbery. Suspects in this case are now in custody. That's all. Rosenquist.
This is your narrator, Frederick Lindsley, bidding you good night for Rio Grande.